Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, October 25th, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it'll make me feel really, really good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show with anything you'd like, except soliciting me for record producer camps. Asking me for money that I don't have and other weird spam shit. Don't do that. But anything else, I'm down for it. I'll read it on the air and I will, I'll respond to you and maybe we'll have a dialogue about it. You can, what else can you do? You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter. At Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. So this is, I'm recording this at about 1:40 in the p.m. on this beautiful Super Bowl Sunday. Not Super Bowl. What the fuck am I saying? Beautiful week seven of the NFL. Like I just time warped into. A time warped 8 to 12 weeks ahead, and I didn't want to do that because, yeah, you don't want to just jump into Black History Month right away. You want to ease into it and make sure that all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed. But beautiful week 7, got the red zone going, looks like the Bills already won. The Bills beat the Jacksonville Jaguars, so we got one black quarterback with a win. Looks like Jameis Winston is going to dismantle the Redskins. He's looking good so far. I think right now the score is 10-0. And the big game tonight, this game is really big. I'm really excited about this one. I hope to not fall asleep on it. Not because it's boring, but just because of my internal clock, and it's something that I don't have control over. It's just what it is. Carolina Panthers and the Philadelphia Eagles. So that's the game I'm excited about. I'm so excited about it. I'm gonna have to un-DVR Quantico and Blood and Oil this week. Ooh, that's pretty big, you guys. I'm a fan of, you know, I'm not going to lie to you, folks. I like my nighttime soaps. I like my nighttime primetime soaps. I like a good, obviously, if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you'll know if you're new to this show, you and new to me on Twitter, I live tweet Pretty Little Liars. I used to live tweet stuff before it was cool. I used to get movies from Redbox, and if they were shitty, I would just live tweet everything. I used to get up really early on Saturday mornings and live tweet a movie. One time I live tweeted a Zac Efron movie. I forget the name of it, but I live tweeted that. I used to do that stuff, but now it's become like a huge thing. And this was about 3 or 4 years ago that I used to do that. And now, you know, I've kind of relegated it to a little bit to mainly just Pretty Little Liars. And every so often I might make a tweet about Nashville or Empire or How to Get Away with Murder. But I'm not as prolific as the great Rod from The Black Guy Who Tips. He live tweets so much that he has his own live tweet Twitter account. I'm not at that level. So you'll just get. When Pretty Little Liars comes back, you'll get those tweets. Some of you may unfollow. I'm surprised that all the cool people that follow me, they still follow me. But and despite my love of Pretty Little Liars, So I have to. So what? Yeah, Quantico, Blood and Oil, How to Get Away with Murder, Nashville, Pretty Little Liars, Empire, and Empire's a nighttime soap. So those are the ones that I watch. And then along with your, you know, of course, I used to watch Breaking Bad. The Affair I watch, that's just a drama, a cable drama. God, that's a depressing show. Just about a relationship going sour, and the guy's with that McNulty is with the girl, the bad girl from the bad, not so bad girl from Luther, start a new relationship, and it's just really fucking depressing. But some good acting. The homie Pacey, Joshua Jackson from Dawson's Creek is on there. Good show, good acting, really depressing. What else am I watching? What else? What are there other dramas that I'm watching on TV? Like stuff that it's not drama. Blackish isn't a drama. Fresh Off the Boat obviously isn't. Yeah, that's Survivor's Remorse. That was good. The finale. I don't think you can call that show LeBrontourage anymore, because if you haven't seen the finale yet, it got really serious. And if you Entourage, nothing ever really got nothing ever was really that serious at all. You know, if they had an issue, it was usually resolved over the course of a couple of episodes. Like, you know, Vince was on drugs for a little bit, but he shook it like Jack Bauer did in 24. But this finale was like, fuck, is this, wow. And I think I know why it happened the way it happened. If the show comes back and we see what happens to a certain character, okay, I get it, because other things are going on. But damn, that threw me for a loop. I was surprised by that. So that's my take on what's happening in the world of television right now. Right now, I'm just hoping Jameis Winston can beat the shit out of they can beat the shit out of the Redskins. Not a fan of the Redskins at all. This is episode. This is episode 141 of the show. Another solo episode. I don't know. I'll get you some guests. I'm working on it. I'm putting some irons in the fire, and I'm working on getting you guys somebody else for me to talk to. That is in the works. But for now, you got me. You got me talking into this microphone on a Sunday, watching Red Zone. Now, last week, I apologize for being. I wasn't really out of character, but I noticed when I uploaded the show and I woke up the next morning, I got a Facebook notification on about the episode, and the homie Antonio hits me up. He's like, oh, that scream you let out when Cam Newton won the game. It was crazy. And I realized that I did do that, but then I actually listened to that part of the show. And it was so goofy. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So I got really excited. I mean, that started off that week. This was a good week for black entertainment. You had Cam Newton come from behind and win against the Seattle Seahawks. You had, what else did you have? You had a black Jedi, the Star Wars trailer got released, and I didn't know. See, I knew John Boyega was gonna be in the movie, but we didn't know. Like, we saw the black stormtrooper, we saw, you know, okay, this black guy's gonna have a pivotal role in the movie, so I was excited about that off the rip, but I didn't know. And then the trailer comes on, this motherfucker has a lightsaber, so I'm assuming that means that this kid is a Jedi. Or one in training or something like that. And I got excited. I was like, holy shit. Cause I slept through, again, it's hard for me, like Monday Night Football, because I'm off on Mondays, but I got to go to work on Tuesday. That my work week starts on Tuesday, and so I fall asleep, and because they premiered it at halftime, and everybody's making these jokes about nerds having to watch football to get to this Star Wars trailer. But I think everybody, for the most part, a lot of people, at least a lot of guys, and I would say women too, are, if you're a child of the 80s or if you're an 80s, really like Star Wars, was that like late 70s, 78 or something when the first one came? I'm not 100% sure, but if you're a kid in that, with the last 30 years, if you're what, 25 and up, I don't know. I'm not good with graphs or Venn diagrams or anything like that. But I will say, if you're 25 and up, you were probably influenced by Star Wars. It was probably a small part of your life or a big part. I remember, now I am excited about this movie, but I'm not going to dress up as a character. You're not going to see me dressed up as Lando Calrissian or Wicket or Boba Fett or Jar Jar Binks. I'm not going to do that. And speaking of that, that reminded me, I used to work. Here's a Star Wars anecdote for you guys. When I was in Chicago, I was working at Best Buy. This had to be 2004. So this was 11 years ago. I was in grad school, and I was working part-time at Best Buy. And when the DVDs of the first three, episodes 1 through 3, came out, I was working there. And we had a midnight sale. And I would say that would probably be – that might have been the first – I think we did Christmas – used to do Christmas sales. But anyway, we had a midnight sale. Oh, did they just score? Did Tampa Bay just score? 17-zip on the Redskins. Jameis just threw another touchdown. All right, that's what's up. That's what's up. Black quarterbacks, hashtag black quarterbacks. If I'll do so with my screensaver, with my phone wallpaper and lock screen, I'll probably have to have Jameis on there. Even if Cam wins, he's undefeated, so I'll have to put him up there tonight, this week. Anyway. So we had a midnight sale, and at the same time, Mean Girls came out. Mean Girls came out on DVD the same Tuesday, and I actually bought both. I bought the Star Wars, and I bought Mean Girls, because that's when Lindsay Lohan was in her prime. That's when she was just at the apex of her career, and it's just gone downhill ever since. I mean, she was voluptuous, she was cute, talented, just the whole package. Movie-wise, I think that's probably the best thing. That might have been the best movie she's ever been in. You had the smart writing, you had Tina Fey, it was just a good comedy, just a good high school comedy. Anyway, so that movie was out, so I was, you know, and people were lined up around the store to get Star Wars on DVD, and there was this one guy who was dressed up in a stormtrooper costume, but he was Jack Sparrow. So he was like, it was a Jack Sparrow stormtrooper hybrid, and that I always thought that was pretty cool. And I'm sure this was 2004, before, probably like right before iPhones came out, like I want to say 06, 07-ish. I remember when I moved to New York, moved back east, I was going to had to choose between an iPhone and a BlackBerry, and I ended up getting a BlackBerry. But anyway, so Star Wars, you know, it's exciting. And when I was a kid, I had some of the toys. My cousins had the toys. You know, both sets of my cousins that were like in my age range, they had the toys, and it was just always fun. My uncle had a Laserdisc player, and we used to just watch that shit all the time. And they had the cartoons, the the fucking the figurines. Like, I loved all of that shit. Like the Luke Skywalker. Like, you could have, it was I think it was made by Kenner. They used to have the die-cast figures, and they'd have the light. It was like a plastic little, Luke had like a plastic thing that was like a lightsaber, and you could like spin the thing on the Death Star, and like they would be fighting him and Darth Vader. I had all of that shit. I had a great fucking childhood, man. I had all those toys. My cousins, if I didn't have one, some of my cousins would have it, and we would play and all that shit, man. The lightsaber. Oh, my God. Like, I loved Star Wars as a kid. And then girls happened. But then I just kind of got into sports and stuff. But I had all those action figures, and oh, my God. I loved that shit. And then I saw the other three, or I think they did. They just weren't good. They weren't good at all. And it's almost like I neuralized myself of those movies. I was just disappointed. I wasn't mad. I just remember seeing it maybe the weekend that they came out. I was like, these just weren't good. Whenever they came out, I would go see them just to complete the series. But I just wasn't a fan of them at all. I was just kind of like, and then Jar Jar Binks was a fucking coon, and just Misa, nigga, what? Yeah, man, just wasn't a fan. But this looks like, you know, I'm interested in seeing it just mainly because of John Boyega. And then I saw this theory, random theory online, where somebody said that Luke wasn't on the poster. I didn't know he was supposed to be, but they're saying Luke Skywalker might be a Sith Lord. Oh my God, the girls, women's vaginas are just drying up as we speak. But I heard that Luke, what they said, the guy said Luke was going to be a Sith Lord because, and then he cited all these different scenes where Luke had turned, and when he goes to train with Yoda, Yoda doesn't really believe in him. He's like, there's certain lines that Yoda says that make it seem like Luke is a bad guy and all this shit. So that Luke, he just doesn't have any faith in Luke Skywalker. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, Luke, when you think good guys, you think that Luke Skywalker is the paragon of good guys. Like, you think that shit, if you see a picture of good guy, you probably see Superman and Luke Skywalker, you know, like that's the guy. So basically he's going to be what his daddy going to be. And when Luke, I think Return of the Jedi, when Luke and I guess Luke and Darth Vader, I'm fucking this up, nerds, correct me if I'm wrong. But when they're fighting, I think there's a scene where they're fighting and the Emperor's there with the fucked up face, with the Freddy Krueger face. And he's like, yeah, Luke, you're an asshole, just like I wanted you to be, or some shit like that. So, yeah, man. So I'm excited about this shit. And God forbid, you know, people are like, people always poo-poo on other people's joy. Just because you're not a super fan of the thing doesn't mean you have to shit on people's. But all the people getting fucking killed and everywhere and cops killing black people, and they've been doing that shit for years, by the way. We just have cameras. And all this horrible shit that's going on, God forbid people be a little excited about a fucking movie that's coming out in a couple months. And less than, you know, but I know one thing, I may have to wait a little bit, but this is what, I guess people are going to be seeing this. It's the holiday season. If I can catch it on a daytime show, I'm not a fan of watching these movies. A movie like that, you never know. It's just too, people get too turned up. I think the last time I went to a movie like that was The Dark Knight Rises at midnight. I think I went to a midnight sale of that, midnight screening rather. I went to a late showing of Focus, the Will Smith movie that people said it bombed, but it was fine. Like I just said, it was a bad movie, but it was decent. If George Clooney did the shit, it would be fine. It's just like one of those movies. It was just like this era, this generation's version of Out of Sight, but maybe not as good. Was it as... No, Out of Sight was fucking great, though. J-Lo in her prime. Clooney. Same, pretty much the same kind of movie. But Out of Sight was way darker, though. Anyway, I think that might have been... Yeah, I'm just not good at those midnight... I fall asleep on that shit. On those fucking things. So I'm really excited about Star Wars. Then Adele, out of nowhere, drops a video that everybody's... That it's called Hello, and her new album's coming out. It's supposed to be called 25. Because she's 25. I didn't realize she was that young. But she's got this video. She goes away to some country house, and she tries to break up amicably with her boyfriend that's played by Tristan Wiles from 90210, another nighttime soap that I used to watch, which featured Jessica Parker Kennedy in a couple episodes. Hello. So he was in there, like, you know, black. I tweeted and Facebooked, thanks Star Wars and Adele, hashtag black actor. So he was a prominent person in a video that's from a huge pop star, and you got a black Jedi. This guy, black kid holding a fucking lightsaber. Like, what more do you want? And you have Cam Newton start off the week with the come from behind victory. And Bokeem Woodbine is on Fargo this season. And I got to say, Bokeem Woodbine, you know, usually, now he's 42 now. I looked him up, and his body of work, you know, he's kind of like the cantankerous, angry black dude. You know, I don't know if you guys remember, I think it was Strapped or some movie where he was like, no, it wasn't Strapped, but he was like, I ain't going out like no punk. It wasn't Strapped. It was some, now I'm going to have to look it up. I'm going to find it for you. I got to find this shit. Because he was in this movie. And I used to know what the movie was. And I'm really upset about us. Upset. Let's see. Hold on. Let's see if Google will do this. Okay, Google. Bokeem Woodbine.
According to Wikipedia, Bokeem Woodbine is an American film and television actor.
You're correct, Google. He is an American TV and film actor. If I can see the title, I'll know what the movie is, and I'll find it. Like, he was in Ray. He was solid in Ray. He didn't like yell at anybody. What the fuck is the name of this? He better be on more than two episodes. No, I think he's the main bad guy. They did a Jarhead 2. Get the fuck out of here. He was in Jarhead 2. He's in like a lot of straight to DVD movies. He was in Riddick. He was in The Host. And that was the last time I saw him in something, like mediocre movie. It was all right. He was in Southland? Oh, yeah. I think he was kind of an asshole in Southland. But this is like early, this is like late, it was like 2009. But this movie, the fuck was the name of this movie? Where he said, I ain't going out like no punk. Caught Up. It's Caught Up. And I didn't even get to it yet. But that was like in the trailer. He was like, I ain't going out like no punk, nigga. Yeah, Caught Up, Daryl. Yep, 1998, the big hit. He was in a lot of shit, man. Dead Presidents, of course. He's just like one of those black actors, you know. But he's kind of like this angry guy, but in he gets typecast as that. And in Fargo, he plays a guy named Mike Milligan, and he's like got a fro with the kind of like a curl. It's not a Jerry curl, but he's just got curly. He's got a curly fro, And he's like very reserved, like Midwestern-y reserved. He's kind of got that Midwestern lilt. And he's doing some shit, man. So I'm excited to see what he does in this. And I got to tweet, Bomani Jones at some point and let him know, like, yo, you know, your boy, Bokeem Woodbine is killing it right now. And, I think one time I tweeted something and he said, Bokeem can't act. Like he was like talking shit about Bokeem Woodbine, and he does it a lot on his show. Not a lot. Like he doesn't hate him, but I know it's come up a lot, on quite a few times on Twitter. So I got to tweet him and say, you know, your boy Bokeem Woodbine is killing it on Fargo. But I think it's pretty cool because it seems like they're shaping him up to be the main villain, of the season. Because last season it was, oh my God, I see his face. Billy Bob Thornton. He was the bad guy, the main bad guy last season. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what he's doing. Cause it's not just like a typical angry black guy character. He's got some nuance, and that nuance is exciting to me. So, this is just a really, last week was a really good week. Cam Newton, John Boyega, Star Wars, Tristan Wilds in the big Adele video, and Bokeem Woodbine, hashtag black actors. Speaking of black actors, I had another audition this week for a commercial. Probably didn't get it, but it was good. It's just good to get that back, get that energy, get that feeling again of going into an audition. I had an audition for like this commercial, this heating and cooling thing, and I had to have like facial reactions. Don't worry, wasn't cooning. It was just like a commercial where it's really cold and I'm trying to have dinner with some friends and it's too cold and all the food's frozen. So I had to like make little like, oh God, these mashed potatoes are frozen. And I had to like, and I made them laugh in the room and they seemed to like me, but you know, I made them laugh. I did my job and that's really all you can do. And whether they choose you, that's on them. So I just have to get to the point. I don't quote unquote care as much as far as like dreaming about the part. It would be like, I think about, man, this would be dope to get some money and do what I love to do. But you kind of do them and forget about them. You have to do them and just forget about it when you're auditioning for stuff. So hopefully more will come up and then there'll be more to forget about. And then if there's a couple that I get, I'll be, oh yeah, all right, let's do it. Let's go do the work, you know. And then I submitted for this thing in L.A. I got put myself on tape. Shout out to Clint at Levity Live for making that happen. I had to submit to some things like a talk show type thing where I was auditioning to be a host. And I read some copy and the homie Clint, the sound guy at Levity Live, recorded me and took the time out of his busy schedule and did that after a show. I did a show at Levity Live, hosted a pro show at Levity Live. They usually do a pro show on Wednesdays where, who was on the show? It was, me, obviously, the homie Gordon Baker Bone, Moody McCarthy and Nick Cantone. It was fun. It was a good time. I was nervous about, it's always just really, it's hard. That's Levity Live is a great room, but sometimes it could be hard, especially when you're taking the bullet and you're hosting the show. And you just have to pull something out of them to get, you really do take that bullet. The last time I was there, I just, you know, I went to the movies and I bought a video game to make myself feel better. Self-medication. So it ended up being a good time. It was good to see, the homie Gordon Baker Bone. And I got to go to his mic. I'm going to start going back to his mic in Jersey. Anyway, so that was fun. I was kind of on a high after that a little bit because I didn't know I was going to be doing that show. Got the call and did it. And I was excited, and I was going to see a movie after, but I was like, no, if I did that, the movie would be watching me. So I did not do that on Wednesday. Where else was I going with that? I was talking about Bokeem's brilliant acting. Let's do that. Let's talk a little bit about the Louisville basketball scandal. You guys hear about that with the strippers and prostitutes coming to the dorms and stripping and prostituting for recruits at Louisville, the team led by Rick Pitino. And there's this the woman who was the madam. She wrote a tell-all book that's out now. I don't even know the name of it. I'm not gonna pretend to drop the names of all these people, but basically it's fucked up. And it's just basically some He Got Game shit where you try to get these boys to play on the team and to come to your school, and you solicit, you get strippers and prostitutes. And that's not cool. And then they claim that Rick Pitino claims that he didn't know anything about it. And it's possible that he didn't, but where was the money had to be coming from somewhere. And the assistant got in trouble and he's somewhere. It's just, he's on leave from the team. It's just fucked up. One of them, that's fucked up in and of itself. Then the woman who was the madam, she had her daughters strip and perform sexual acts with the players. And it was just, that's kind of fucked up to bring your kids in it. You know, it is. Yeah, no, it's not kind of, it is fucked up. Just kind of do as I say, not as I do. You would think that would be apropos in that situation, but it's not. And there's other, like Bomani Jones has some great takes on that, and Lebatard did too. I would say listen to them because they know, they have more of the details. But I just looking at that stuff on Outside the Lines and all of that stuff, and then come to find out now at the ACC Media Day, Rick Pitino is not going to show up because he doesn't want to talk about it. But there's players that are going to be at the Media Day. And they have to answer the questions that he's supposed to answer. And to me, that's bullshit. One, because you got to have a backbone as a coach. I don't know if he's still going to have a job after this. We'll see. But I don't know, man. That's kind of fucked up to make the players have to take the brunt of it. They're not getting paid. Some people say, you know, if you're paying these kids, then that shit probably doesn't happen. That would take, they have to do something, man. These coaches are making so much money. I don't know. It's just kind of, it's fucked up. And Lamar Odom, he's better. He's back with Chloe. Their divorce wasn't finalized. And people are trying to take ownership over him. There's one side of it where it's like, oh, they're calling him, oh, this one of the, he's a Kardashian husband, the husband of, that's what he's known for now. To a certain part of the population, he's known as the dude from the Kardashians. And that they had a spinoff, the Khloe and Lamar show, and a lot of people, that's the reality of the quote unquote reality of the situation. But he's known from that, not being a 2-time NBA champion. And on the other side of it is the sports world claiming him. And Scott Van Pelt went on a mini rant about, you know, the bullshit that is reality TV and blase blah, this, that, and the third. And then what was funny to me, he goes on and I think he closed it out by saying his name is Lamar Odom. His name is Lamar Odom. Like, yo, all right, man, I get it. My only argument about that, the whole reality TV show thing is the fact that this guy, you could look at it as Kim Kardashian has sex with Ray J and now her whole family's famous. She's a socialite and all of that stuff. I would say just putting it all into perspective, just looking at it on a macro level, is like, she has a commodity. The Kardashians are a commodity. There's a segment of the population, a large segment, that watches them on TV. They like their show. They buy their products. They're fans. The ratings go up. They've done countless seasons of the show. I've seen a couple of them. And they're making money off of it. And that's a that's how they got rich. That's their thing. I'm not talking about, I don't really give a shit of what they mean morally. I don't think they have any moral, I don't even know. I don't even think of not even just extracting the morality. Doesn't even work. They got some, they're selling something themselves and people are buying it. Lamar Odom, on the other hand, was a guy that, quote unquote, worked. He worked for what he had, for what he achieved. He was blessed with the ability to play basketball. He cultivated his talent and he made a name for himself playing basketball and from humbling beginnings. And he made himself a star, a guy that could have been a lot better, but his own shortcomings, you know, he's just a guy with issues, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but, you know, something that a lot of people bring up is the fact that that Kardashian family, however fucked up you think it is, was something that was welcoming to him and what gave him something that he lacked, which was stable family. However stable you think, all families are fucked up anyway. They're just not on reality TV. So, I mean, it is what it is, you know. But that was something that he didn't have. And I honestly think he and Khloe genuinely loved each other. And they obviously still do, because now they're back together. And Chris Rock made a joke he put a joke on Instagram from some e-cars about, this is the first time something like coke, drugs and hookers got a guy back into marriage or something like that. And people were upset about that. And they're like, oh, Chris Rock, da 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 da. And then they mentioned that he's hosting next year's Oscars. I didn't even know that. They buried the lead with that one. So he's hosting the Oscars. I'm going to probably watch the Oscars now. I mean, I just want to see who wins, but definitely watch his monologue and stick with it longer than I would with the others. Because I just really, this year, I just sort of was watching something else and would look on Twitter and see if somebody won and then try to look at their speech. But I didn't really give a shit this year. And I kind of don't give a shit this year. It's not that. This year, I mean, just with movies that are Oscar contenders. Sorry, I got this chair that's real squeaky. So that's just how I feel about it. Everybody's trying to claim him, and he's not yours to be claimed, you know? That's all I had to say about it. I hope he gets better, and they said he had all these strokes, and it's crazy. It's crazy that the guy's still alive. Glad he's alive. Hope he recovers. And that's really all that matters. I don't really give a shit about, you know, who he, I will admit though, it did make me feel kind of like, he's not just a reality star. He's a fucking basketball player. And then you see people that are like, oh, cause it's a woman that's successful, like Khloe and everything, you know, oh, they're successful too. You just, you know, you can't just look at it as basketball. Why do men always, you know, Lamar Odom is a basketball player. When it's said and done, you know, he ain't just going to be Khloe Kardashian's husband. I mean, that motherfucker was a basketball player who I will say really didn't live up to his his full potential. Because of his shortcomings, like all of us have, and people want to make themselves feel better than, or make themselves better than someone else, and a lot of times because of jealousy, because he's super rich and he's talented. It's, oh, well, I don't see how he could be addicted to drugs and all that shit. I mean, you had all this money and you, that should make you happy. And it doesn't work like that. Addiction is addiction, you know? It can be whatever your vice is, it could get a hold of you. It's like being addicted to alcohol or being addicted to food or all of that shit, you know? Everybody's got their demons, and you know, you don't have to belittle somebody to make yourself feel better. And it's just how it is, man. I don't know. I guess that's just the nature of the beast. That's how people are. They want to shit on other people when they're down. It's just, it makes me feel sad. And I mean, if you have friends that I had lost family members because of drugs and addiction, relationships have been affected in the family, and you know, I have friends that lost close family members far too young. I've been to a funeral where a guy that was my age that just had addiction to drugs, and family friends, and in Bergen County where I live, like, it's just heroin has been just running rampant, and it's a tough thing, man. Addiction is something that affects everybody. It doesn't matter what class you're in. I was at the barbershop yesterday talking to my barber, and Lamar Odom came up, and we were just talking about it. You know, and my barber was admitting, like, talking about what he had to go through and with alcohol, and it, you know, how people that were on drugs, he would go to, you know, AA meetings or whatever, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever type of meetings and things like that, and people just look at him, just alcohol, and motherfucker, you know, these guys were just heavy drug addicts and all of that stuff, man. So it just, that shit affects everybody. On a lighter note, let's I've finished, here's another where the ladies can tune out. Life is Strange. I finished episode 5 of Life is Strange. I thought that I was going to do it this weekend. I ended up doing it on a Thursday night. So I get home, go from the gym, and take a shower, and I downloaded it because I had the season pass. So I was like, okay, I'm going to finish this game. It's going to be, what, 2.5-3 hours? Or I'll just play some of it. And I finished it. It took a while. It did take about 2 or 3 hours. And I was surprised. I surprised myself that I was actually going to finish it on a work night when I had to go to work in the morning. And it was good, but it just seemed like the ending was a little disappointing. I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody that's playing it, but I will say Life is Strange is this game where if you haven't heard of it, haven't heard me talk about it, it's a game. It's basically you play this girl named Max Caulfield, who's a high school senior high school student that discovers she has the ability to reverse time and change the mistakes that she's made. And when she begins to use this power, she finds out that it has some type of effects that, you know, you kind of fuck something up. If you go back and do one, fix one thing, something else goes out of whack. And it's an interesting game. And it's very compelling. Like the first 4 episodes, you're just like, holy shit, what's happening? And then the cliffhanger at the end of episode 4 was like, holy shit. And it delivered on some of those notes with the last episode, but I felt like at points it got too intense. Like I think it's a teen game, but there was one point where your character, where Max is being held captive by somebody, and she, you know, you do what she says, what you would say, and kind of let me go, and the bad guy's like, shut up, you fucking cunt, and I was like, whoa, you guys are really pulling out all the stops for this shit. I was not expecting that. I was just like, oh, shit. You went there. You really went there, bad guy. And he even had to catch himself. He was like, oh, I'm sorry. it was intense, man. And there was some – it just kind of plotted along towards the end. It was kind of ham-fisted, where it was just showing you everything. And it was a little unfulfilling, but it's a very good game. I think it's one of the best games of the year. It's got to be. Until Tomb Raider comes out, that I can't play until next year sometime. When I'm trying to think of all the games, as far as any game that's not 2K16, as far as something that has a story, it's a very, very compelling story, and I highly recommend it. I think it's $20 for what's 3 times 5? About 15 hours of gameplay. So, I mean, in each episode, it's very rich. And you just, episode 5, they go in, like they pull out all the stops, and it's just some moments that are just like, what the fuck? Are you serious? You're trying to keep me from the finale with this bullshit. And it's just one moment in particular, one scene in particular where it's just like, what the fuck are you doing right now? What are you doing, creators of this game? Come on. Come on. Seriously? Seriously? That was pretty annoying. But overall, terrific game. Very compelling episodes 1 through 4. Just fun. I've never played anything like it. I would say, you know, and that's not true. It's a little more... It's kind of like Beyond Two Souls. Beyond Two Souls, the acting's much better. More of a intense. It's a little more intense. It is pretty fucking intense. It's a good game. There's some moments that still resonate with me with that game. Life is Strange. I recommend it. So I saw some movies this week. I'll start off with this documentary that I saw on Netflix called The Roughnecks. And this movie, I'll read you the summary. The Roughnecks tells the story of the Fort Worth Rigdalia Roughnecks, one of the oldest and most intense peewee football teams in Texas, as they set out to win the youth football Super Bowl, their last chance at a title they narrowly lost last year. So it's this team where these kids have been playing together since they were 4 years old, and it's a peewee league, and the ages are 4 to 11, and it follows the season of the 10 and 11 year olds, and it's a very different cast of characters. They focus a lot on the kids. It's just really good. Up to the title game, and kind of like really up to the climactic moment of the last game of the season, and you get to know about the coaches and all of that shit, and it's just really, I think you know, for a dude that watches chick flicks, that like the homie Will Miles, when he was on, he's into rom-coms and stuff like that, but I would say for guys, nothing moves me more than a really good sports documentary, and it's usually set in high school or younger. I would say one of the best documentaries ever that I've seen. I know a lot of people will say Ken Burns' shit, like this Hoop Dreams was the best for me, because that was like the first, that had to be one of the first documentaries that I just like understood, maybe, was really moved by. Just a terrific film. Just it was great storytelling. But it's something that moves me. I didn't cry. I got emotional watching this. And then documentaries just about kids. Like there was one documentary about kids playing chess. It's some, if you Google kids chess. I think it's called Brooklyn Knights or something like that. That's good. It was one about kids in an underprivileged town and near on some kids in Philly that were chefs, and they had these competitions and they'd win culinary school and they win scholarships and shit like that. Kids, young people, going after a goal and achieving them or not achieving them, but even if they didn't achieve it, they learned something about themselves. All that shit is super compelling to me. And those are the things that if you want to make Chris Lambert cry, you throw on one of those things. I lost it watching The Undefeated, which is a documentary about a school in Tennessee. High school kids in, it's not Nashville, in Memphis. And I think I've cried maybe at least two times watching that movie. My God. But this one, Roughnecks, just very compelling. The kids were really adorable. You know, they're playing football, but they're sweet kids. I saw a little bit of myself when I played at that age, and it just really reminded me of growing up playing football and having those coaches. The coaches would yell at them. But it wasn't, they weren't mean. They just wanted to prepare them. And it was, they were strong role models. Like speaking as a kid who had both parents, had, you know, good, a decent household, came from a decent family. It was still good to be around those other black men that were my coaches, other men in the community that taught you lessons, that taught you, because you learn about how to be a part of a team. You learn about sports is a thing that integrates you into society. And that's something that I took, even though I was a theater kid too. I learned a lot of those lessons from playing sports like football, basketball, and baseball. I learned about that from sports, and I carried that with me to this day, to, you know, working on a job or, you know, doing a play, being in an ensemble, knowing when to fall back, knowing when to take the lead, just being and contributing. I mean, it's something that's very important. And I think, you know, it's empowering to men and women, and it's good for women to be in that, involved in that too, not necessarily football, but I mean, unless they're playing each other, I don't think they should play with boys in football. It's just how I feel. That's where I'm sticking. That's where I'm going with that. Really, really good. It just that was something that I threw on a Monday afternoon, and it just warmed my heart. It was like Friday Night Lights with little kids. And it was just a really good fucking movie, and I highly recommend it. So The Roughnecks, it's on Netflix. I think you'll enjoy it if you like those types of movies. So Friday after work, I was really excited. I went to see Steve Jobs, and I ordered my ticket online from my AMC Stubs app like a fucking nerd. And I went to see it. I went to got my reserve seats. And like the nice seats that lean back at the Palisades Mall, it was great. I had a fat boy crisis. I bought some mini Reese's cups that come in the bag, and you know it's a tearaway thing, so you just tear it away and you open it. It's like a Ziploc. Well, some fucking reason it wouldn't open. And I was like, I'm not going to get my fucking candy that I waited for all week, that I've been a good fatty, and I waited, didn't have any, like, candy or shit during the week. I was like, okay, I'm going to enjoy Steve Jobs. I go to the grocery store, I sneak this candy in, and it wouldn't open. So I had to stab it with my car keys and get the fucking thing open and eat the candy like a savage. So that was a fat boy crisis that was averted. And I like this movie. Steve Jobs, this is probably, and I don't think Oscar Isaac's going to get a nom for Ex Machina or anything. So I think right now, based on what I've seen, and if I have to remember it when all this stuff comes out, from what I've seen, this is the start. This is probably the start of the Oscar movies. This is going to get nominated for the best screenplay, probably best film. They're saying it tanked at the box office. I don't see. Okay, first of all, I will say best screenplay for Aaron Sorkin. Best actor nom for Michael Fassbender. Best actress if not best actress, probably best supporting actress nom for Kate Winslet. This movie was fucking good. And I like the way that they did it, because I saw Aaron Sorkin on The Daily Show about a week or two ago. And he said, you know, it's 2 hours. It's might be like 35, 40 minutes at one. The unveiling of one product, another one for another product. And then at the end, there's another product that they're unveiling. And it's basically behind the scenes of three major, what do you call it? Launches. It's like behind the scenes of, in 1984, the launch of the Macintosh 128K. 1988, the launching of Next, the Next computer. I don't even remember this, but I was 8 years old, so I probably wouldn't. 1988, and that folded. And then when he went back in 1998, he releases the iMac, which was featured in Felicity, because Noel had one. So, yeah, man, it's just good acting. And a lot of people, it's not culturally active. It's not culturally active, but not 100% accurate. It was, why is it doing this to me? Okay, let me find out. I was trying to get you the. Okay, so it says Steve Jobs is a 2015 American biographical film loosely based on the life of Apple Inc. co-founder Steve Jobs, starring Michael Fassbender in the title role. I'm trying to find what it was based on. It was based on a novel. Not a novel, it was based on a book. Based on a book called Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson. So that's what it's based on, that book. But I really like this movie, and it's funny, like, this is probably, it's not the, it can't be the first, but this is one of the best father, white father, denying that a kid is his. And the way that he does it is so cold, and it's just like, damn, I'm going to talk about this shit on stage, so I'm not going to burn it here. But it's just like the acting is just really fucking good. Everybody, like, who else is in this movie? Okay, Michael Fassbender, Kate Winslet, Seth Rogen, Jeff Daniels, and what's the other pretty girl? Her name, she looks like, I'll tell you who she looks like. She looks like, what's it? Let me do the. Okay, let's see if Google works again. I'm gonna try to work this thing. Let's use this. Let's use all this stuff. Her name is like Catherine Waterston. It would be better. See, I thought that I had. I can go to the IMDb. I just hate how the computer acts when it knows that I want some. Catherine Waterston. And okay, I'm going to do this. Okay, Google. Margot at the Wedding.
Here is some information about Margot at the Wedding.
Jennifer Jason Leigh is who she looks like. Catherine Waterston looks a lot like Jennifer Jason Leigh. I had to remember Margot at the Wedding was the first movie I could think of that this actress, that Jennifer Jason Leigh was in. So Michael Fassbender, Kate Winslet, Seth Rogen, Jeff Daniels, Catherine Waterston. Really good. Just a really good acting movie. It was just like the douche slash nerd in me sort of like it played out. It played out like a play. It was just acting. You're in this space, and these moments happen. A character in it had these like French scenes where like a French scene is when you're doing a play and you got two people on stage and they're talking. That's scene one. Then you have another character enter on the same space. That's scene two. So like scene two is when the third person enters, blase skip, something like that. And it's really fucking good, man. It just well executed. Danny Boyle might get another nom. Did he win? I feel like Danny Boyle won for Slumdog Millionaire, or the movie won Best Picture. Let's just look him up. I feel like he did. I could be wrong. It would be nice to not have dead air while I'm figuring it out. Director, producer, screenwriter. He did Sunshine. Underrated movie. I felt like I talked about that before when I talked about Ex Machina, because the guy who wrote it directed Ex Machina. Alex Garland. It was his first feature, I believe. I feel like he got an Oscar for Slumdog. List awards and nominations received by Danny Boyle. Academy Awards. Yes, he did. He won Best Director for Slumdog Millionaire, and he got nominated for Best Picture and Best Adapted Screenplay for 127 Hours, which I didn't think was all that great. So very good movie. I highly recommend it. I don't know why. I think some people are now saying it's not doing well at the box office because it just came in wide release, but it's not doing well at the box office because Seth Rogen is a super liberal and somebody, and he said like something like fuck Ben Carson, and a lot of black people had said fuck Ben Carson. So I don't know. This, oh, we're not going to see your movie, Seth Rogen. And he's not even the star of the movie. He's in like a couple of scenes, and really good scenes and really big scenes. And it didn't surprise me. His acting didn't surprise me. I just think he was just kind of like Seth Rogen, playing Wozniak. And he was just good in the scenes. He stood up to a beast of an actor, Michael Fassbender. He stood up to Master Epps and Magneto. He stood up to Magneto. I have to say Magneto is more, you know, Michael Fassbender more as Magneto than you know him as the evil slave master in 12 Years a Slave. So, yeah, I highly recommend Steve Jobs. What else? Yeah, so I gave you the movies, Life is Strange. Music. Last night I went to go see Hiatus Coyote, one of my favorite new bands, favorite new musical finds this year. Somebody put me on, one of my buddies put me on, and they're fucking fantastic. I went to go see them. Love their album. They're an Australian band, and they've got two albums. One is called Talk Tomahawk, which came out in 2012, and Choose Your Weapon is the latest and greatest album, and it's fucking great. They were at Brooklyn Bowl. They were opening for Chance the Rapper. I think they did maybe two dates at Terminal 5, and the lead singer Napalm, Naipalm. So the band consists of Napalm, Paul Bender, Perrin Moss, and Simon Maven, and they were, you know, supporting Chance the Rapper, and they were just saying how it feels good to be in a space where people really accept you. And it just seems like Chance the Rapper is a rapper, but he's not like one of those rappers that I think would draw a crowd of people that would be assholes. And I guess Hiatus Coyote, they're kind of a soul, like neo soul-ish, just a good fucking band. And it seemed like you would just kind of fuck with them off principle, but I'm not going to say like, oh, you're supposed to like their fucking music, but I know being an opener and having opened for some big names, when you open for people before you become a headliner, in comedy at least, the people aren't coming to see you. They're coming to see the main guy or girl that you're opening for. And you just have to do your job and set the mood as the feature act, as the opener, and do your job and do the best that you can. And it was just kind of weird that they just, that sort of crowd that, you know, Chance the Rapper just, that he would draw, it seems like those people would be at least open-minded to hear. But she just kind of alluded to the fact that I guess those shows weren't too hot for them. But they fucking ripped. They performed for almost 2 hours. They killed it. It was great. She's got an incredible singing. Napalm has got an incredible singing voice, just really strong. And I posted a clip, a brief snippet on the Instagram, and they're really good. They jammed for almost 2 hours. My only issue was just the fact that the shit started too late. I got, like, the show was supposed to start at 8 and I got there like 7-ish. And the show started. They had DJ Spinna, who I think I met DJ Spinna at a foreign exchange show. I want to say last year when they were in town last year, 24. Yeah. They were in town. They're at the Music Hall of Williamsburg in 2014. Yes. Yeah, they were. So I saw them there. And they were great. And I met DJ Spinna. He was backstage and he's a cool dude. There's a picture of it on Instagram of me in the foreign exchange and DJ Spinna. Really cool pick. He did for like an hour and change. And it was like, okay, DJ Spinna, you're amazing. But it's like, let's do this. I was standing up the whole time. And one of the security guys gave me a wristband. And I was like posted up because I was actually talking about this with one of my good friends, just like being in your 30s. You're just like, OK, we're going to post up on a wall and all this stuff. And you just post up. And when the show starts, you have something to lean on and you're just taking it all in. So I was doing that. I was standing next to another guy who had the same idea and some other people came over. And then as the concert starts, people always want to get in the fucking front right when the show's about to start. And I get it. And then I'm standing next to this one girl and she's got two guy friends with her. Her friends leave for a long time and she's talking to these other guys. And then she says something to me and I just looked at her and we kind of smiled at each other. I was like, where are your friends? And she said, oh, they just left me, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, she's like, I can take care of myself. I was like, I know, I'm sure you can, but it's just weird that your friends just left you for more than an hour. And we were talking and I said, oh, what do you do? How'd you hear about the band? She said, oh, I love them. They're great. And I said, oh, I just found out about them. And I said, oh, what do you do? She said, I'm a singer. And I was like, oh, nice. That's awesome. Talking to her about that. And she's from Toronto. And then she asked me what I did. I said, I'm a comedian. She's like, oh, my God, that's so cool. She said, I think you're going to make it. I was like, why do you say that? I was like, that's nice of you. Thank you. That's very sweet of you. And she said, you just have this presence about you that I feel like you're going to, you know, I was like, that's very sweet. I hope I can pay my bills. And her goofy ass friends, wrote down my name on her phone and she told me to do it. I didn't just like take my phone and put my name in it. But, then she had her friends came back. They're like, who's Chris Lamberth? Like they were trying to see who gives a fuck. And then it just became too many fucking dudes that were near me and in my fucking personal space and gonna like, don't nod your head to the music standing in front of me. Like it was just kind of, and I said, okay, I have this wristband. I'll just go at that little top level and watch the show. And I just felt like I was constantly in the fucking way. like that whole night. The show was amazing, but there's people, Brooklyn Bowl, you can bowl while you're there. You can bowl while the music's going on. And I just think like, it's just weird to me. Like you, somebody singing their heart out on stage and performing and you're just fucking bowling. I don't know. But Brooklyn Bowl's probably one of my, that's probably one of my favorite places to go to a show. That and Mercury Lounge, to just find out, just go and just enjoy myself. And it was a great time. I had a great time. And I even got to meet one of the best singers of my generation, Bilal Oliver. I saw in an interview. Shout out to Preezy the Kid, from it's like the Slam. He's a hip hop writer. He's a writer. He's a music journalist. Preezy the Kid on Twitter. So I'm trying to get the guy to come on the show. It's in the works, but I'm just putting it out there, and one day we'll get him. So he had an interview with Bilal, and Bilal mentioned that he was a Hiatus Coyote fan. So I saw this guy, I was like, that looks like Bilal, and he was leaving, and so he shook somebody's hand, gave him a hug, and I just said, Bilal, and like I wasn't a nerd. I just said, hey man, you don't know me. I'm just a big fan of your work. I appreciate what you do. And he said, thanks, brother. And I shook his hand and he hugged, you know, did the little dap hug, handshake hug thing. Really cool dude. One of the best singers ever. The best vocalist. I'm just going to say he's one of the, and I know I speak in hyperbole, but I've talked about Bilal before. One of the greats, the best vocalist of his generation. I'll put it that way. And that puts it into context. I would say that puts it in correct context about who that guy is. Probably should have asked him to do my podcast. If I wasn't such a, I wasn't scared. I was afraid that the grass, I would have had that grass is greener. I felt like I had the grass is greener mindset of if I were to move in the space where I was at, where the groundlings were, and I moved to that top tier, I wouldn't have been as comfortable. I wouldn't have been able to enjoy myself because like it just seemed like a lot of shit was going on. And I don't know about this. Like going to some of these shows, there's people that are there for the show, that are clearly there for the show. And it was funny to watch white people be at that show and to just be like, no, it's not. White people love soul shit. So that's me being an asshole. I shouldn't fuck that. But a lot of those kids, a lot of those people, they knew that music and they were singing along. They were there because they loved the band. There were some people, there's always some people at these shows that are just so like too cool for school. Like they just seemed like they came there to show you what kind of outfits they had. And they just kept walking up and down the fucking strip in the fucking area for you to fucking see what they're wearing. There's one guy that looked like Russell Wilson. And he had on this like big sweater and his guys in scarves and shit and fucking hats. And just like, are you there for the show or are you there to be on some haberdashery sartorial blog? Like, what are you doing? Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like they just keep moving. I don't know if it's because I'm getting old or not, but that's just really fucking annoying to me, and that kind of put a damper on the whole experience. Just people moving around the whole. And the first time I was, that was made. That was something a bit of a discovery to me. And I may have mentioned this before in the show. I went to go see Alicia Keys. My dad took me to see Alicia Keys for my college graduation present. I was in love with Alicia Keys and he took me to Atlantic City, bought me a ticket, didn't get himself one, but he stood outside of the venue like cuz it was in the casino. So he was just kind of hanging out looking at the show and people thought he was like an undercover cop or something. And that kind of happens to me where I have to talk to my dad about that, like when I hang, cause my buddy works at Brooklyn Bowl and he's a great, good buddy. And, And sometimes if I just stop by to talk to him when I'm in the area, people will think I'm a bodyguard. I'm a security guy because I'm a big black guy, but I don't have, I'm not wearing black. Like they'll, whatever. And I guess my dad has that same type of presence. But anyway, people were just, I had pretty good seats and I'm sitting there and it's just people are walking up and down the fucking venue while the show's going on. It's like Alicia Keys, like you paid good money to fucking see this Grammy award winning artist and you're just sitting there. You're not sitting there enjoying her. You're just walking all over the fucking place. I'll never get over that shit. It's just, it's annoying to me. So you can't even fucking, like, I nerded out a little. I took the couple clips and, or for you, for not for YouTube, but for the Instagram shit and, but nothing like just being a total dick, like not even enjoying the show. And I felt like I was in the way of the waiters sometimes and people bowling and shit. I don't know, man. Like, sometimes people annoy me in that way. Like just walking up and down the fucking venue just to, I don't know what it is. And there was this one girl who was, I thought she was annoying, but she was cute, but like she was talking to her friends and her friends were in front of me and I guess she hadn't seen them. And she was cute, but I thought like, why? And people like have these full blown conversations and I guess, and she was talking and then like Napalm was singing and she was just doing this in the middle of some amazing run. And she just looked at the stage. She's like, she's fucking amazing. And I was like, I could date you. Like, she's just talking and she just looks over. And she's like, wow, she's fucking amazing. Just one of those cute-ass, racially ambiguous women that I didn't speak to that night. But I was just there to have a good time. But, yeah, man. Overall, a good night and a great show. But just... some people can be, Tampa Bay's winning 24-7. How do you like that, Redskins? Sitting down RG3, you motherfuckers. Anyway, yeah, it was an awesome show. And I had a great time. I highly recommend, go see Hiatus Coyote whenever they're in your town. Go check out Choose Your Weapon, Talk Tomahawk. They're just phenomenal. If you've ever enjoyed any of my musical recommendations, this will be this is one of them to definitely check out. I was going to talk about something else, but I think I will save it. I'll save it because I want to take in something next later on this week, and then we'll bring it up. We'll bring it up and have a more well-rounded talk about it. So let me give you some plugs. Got some shows coming up, so I'm excited. For a while there was pretty sparse, but here's some shows. This week I'll be at the Stress Factory on October 27th, Gordon Baker Bones Big Ten Comedy Show Halloween Edition. I will be at the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, New Jersey at 8 p.m. I'll be at Passenger Bar on November 3rd in Brooklyn, New York at 9:30. 11-4, November 4th, I make my triumphant return to the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn, New York at 9 o'clock p.m. November 5th, two shows, one at the Astoria Coffee in Astoria, New York at 8 p.m., and then I'll be at Bijan in Brooklyn, New York at 10 p.m. I'll be headlining the Shannon on November 21st at 5 p.m. And then I'll be also on the 21st. I'll be hosting at the Standing Room, which was formerly the Laughing Devil, at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. And then there's a December date right now at Halyards on December 15th in Brooklyn at 8 o'clock p.m. So those are some dates. You're obviously listening to the show. Subscribe, iTunes, rate it, review it, all that good stuff. And I will talk to you next week. Take it easy.